Hello and welcome to the first ever Dan DeGia and Loktar's podcast. We're gonna actually start doing some movie reviews and see how you guys like it. And we've chosen a very interesting movie today. We're gonna actually review a movie that I'd recommended, and I'm hoping that you guys like as much as I did. And now I'll hand the mic over to Dan so that he can introduce himself and actually, just talk about yourself.
Oh, God. I hate doing that. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Dan, the one responsible for DeGia.net in all its glory. I'm trying to remember when I first stumbled across your blog, John. It was over a year ago. That's about all I know. I think I found you on Technorati, and can't really put my finger on it, but you the way you write, and a lot of the points and issues you brought up just intrigued me. So I kept coming back. And with Equilibrium, the review you did of it, in all honesty, I read it, hastily. I think I was on a break at work and, supposed to be actually doing work. But it, the name's the one that kind of sticks in your mind. And, the more you and I talked, the more you actually kept pestering me to watch it. So I finally buckled down and did it.
And I mean, was it worth your time? Was it worth the 2 hours?
It was. It took two times to sit and watch it. The first time I was much later than 11 o'clock, and the first half hour, 40 minutes, it kind of slow moving, to be completely honest. And I wasn't really prepared for that because I was expecting, lots of action, lots of gunfights. So I actually fell asleep the first time I tried to watch it. tonight when I watched it, after the kids were in bed, I had expected the beginning to be, slow moving. So I was prepared for that. And it was a great movie. Wouldn't say it's the best movie I've ever seen, but it was, I'd say 4 out of 5 stars easily. I really liked the premise. It's not a new one by any means. Same along the lines of 1984, Fahrenheit, 451, blah 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 blah. But I like the direction they went with this one.
Yeah, I definitely. The reason that this movie is, really struck a chord with me when I watched it is that the first time I actually saw it was right around the time of the last election, and it was just like perfect timing to see a movie that talks about drugging a whole generation of people.
Yeah.
And making them believe that they're in a safe place.
Yeah, well, it's another example of extremism, which, like I've always said, everyone points fingers at the extremists and, related to any issue or cause or religious order or what have you. But it really is, it's the extremists that kind of keep us all in check and let us know how far is too far. And a movie I thought did a great job because, obviously futuristic after the, takes place after the Third World War. I think actually they mentioned after the Fourth World War also.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's obviously, way down the tracks, but that sense of extremism of, literally, at the sound of a buzzer or an alarm on your watch, having to stop and drug yourself, as over the top as it was, it did kind of get its point across.
Well, you see, and the way that I look at it right now is that even in our current society, we are expected to suppress many emotions, and not so much in the sense of the extreme emotions as in anger and lust or what have you, but you know, we are, you know, we have to be politically correct. We have to be subdued to a lot of norms that might not be as extreme as they were portrayed in this movie, but they are definitely getting up there. I mean, I think people are getting very sensitive to a lot of different issues, and you know, speaking your mind is not the smartest thing to do in our current society.
Yeah, it's it can definitely get you in trouble, or at least noticed. Which, you know, if that's what you're trying to do, then it's relatively easy.
Yeah. No. And I mean, it scares me that, for example, right now drugs are being used so, you know, readily available to take care of all these problems that I think at times could be solved if we had a better, you know, society or a better family structure, a better support structure for people, instead of having to, you know, drug them with, you know, the Prozac. I mean, everybody likes to pick on the Prozac, so let's pick on the Prozac.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's totally it. I mean, as far back as I can remember, I've never been, you know, I've never liked taking pills. Just something about taking pills, just it always creeped me out, you know, because on a super paranoid level, you don't know what they're putting in it. I'm not a chemist. Hell if I know what half, I can't even pronounce half the things on the box of aspirin, you know, or Tylenol cold or anything. So just as a personal rule of thumb, I just keep away from pills. You know, if I'm sick, you know, I just try to let my body fight it off, because I figure, you know, people live for how many hundreds of years without medicines like that, and you know, obviously there's going to be some where, you know, if you have strep throat, you're going to need antibiotics. But I do think a lot of people I know personally kind of tend to rely way too heavily, and that they use these drugs, even though they're legal, as you know, as a crutch for their daily life. And
oh yeah, definitely. There's a lot of people that take, you know, pain medicine every single day.
Yeah, well, and you know, and there's some people that need it. I mean, my grandmother has horrible back pain, you know, and she, for a while, she needed, she had a pump that was surgically put in her like next to her stomach, that it was on a time release, and it would just release morphine into her system, you know. So there are definitely people that, you know, that need drugs of one kind or another. The movie, I thought, did an excellent job on, you know, again, come back to the taking it to the extreme, but keeping, you know, an entire they actually didn't say, I'm presuming an entire, you know, world or culture, what have you, of people just completely subdued and, you know, under the thumb of Big Brother.
Oh yeah, completely. One thing that I thought was interesting was in the beginning of the movie, even though it was, you know, quite slow after the very first gun scene, you see that, you know, the whole premise of the movie with the drugs is to remove emotion from people so that they don't feel any kind of emotion. And surprisingly enough, or I guess, I don't know, maybe it isn't as obvious to me as it might be to other people, is that one of the biggest threats to, you know, a society that wants to get rid of emotions is art and books.
Yeah, and increasing the list of banned, banned items. That's, or just, you know, increasing censorship on all levels. I think that's something that, you know, unless you're totally turning a blind eye, I think that's something that everyone, you know, in recent years can notice a huge, I guess, increase, you know, in how much censorship there is. You know, you can't, you know, you brought up, you know, speaking your mind earlier, you know, you can't speak out against, you know, President Bush, or if you do, then you're liberal, you know, you're labeled a, you know, a liberal wacko. Or on the other hand, you know, if you speak anything for, you know, the, you know, Republicans, then you're labeled, you know, a conservative, you know,
Zealot or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, it, all sides of the, it, all over the map, everyone's guilty of it. You know, but I did like how in the movie they, anything, you know, art, music, literature, anything that would convey strong emotions, you know, there's a scene, classical music, Beethoven, you know, stuff that most of us take for granted, you know, the, in the movie, the government classified those things as, I think they called it EC-10, it was like a rating, you know,
yeah,
system.
Yeah, kinda like EC-10, the, yeah. Emotional content.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, it's like having a parental advisory sticker all over the place. You know, in the movie, the government would come and destroy it, and, you know, we're obviously not to that extreme yet. Hope, obviously, we never get to that point. But the more books that are banned, you know, the more people that successfully get, you know, Harry Potter books removed from elementary schools and public libraries, you know, the, again, the, in my view, the extremists, the people that just, you know, freak out over such little stuff. You know, books are supposed to open our minds, they're supposed to teach us something, they're supposed to show us something that we wouldn't ordinarily experience.
Well, and I believe that a lot of times they're really trying to squash out imagination. I think that today's kids are so spoon-fed by TV and everything that they see that they don't have the imagination that, you know, we had to do. I mean, we had to, you know, grab a piece of wood and make think it was a car.
Make a toy out of it.
Right. And, you know, now kids, it's like, you know, if the toy doesn't have, you know, 3 million lights on it, they're not interested on it for more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's one thing I've definitely noticed. I mean, you know, when I grew up, I spent most of my time playing, you know, playing with my G.I. Joes and Legos and stuff.
Right.
You know, digging holes in the backyard and throwing them from trees and stuff. You know, and I noticed with, you know, my six-year-old, she just, and, you know, and it could be, the only girl I knew growing up was my sister, and she was 6 years older than me. You know, so I'm sure gender plays an issue in that, you know, but with my six-year-old, you know, she has this need to be constantly, you know, totally entertained, whether it's TV or movie or Game Boy or whatever. And, you know, there's some days where, most days we try to limit it, you know, but some days it's just like, got to put, you know, put your foot down and just let her know it's okay to be bored, you know. Boredom, you know, spurs on creativeness, you know.
Yes. And, you know, it was interesting that, you know, they did make a very strong child character in that movie, and he was scary.
Yeah, I mean, before we go on, we should probably say that we're probably going to slip and give some spoilers. So, but, you know, the movie's been out for 4 years, so.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of spoilers, I don't think, that you wouldn't have seen elsewhere. But, yeah, I mean, the kid, he was, even in his really creepy moments, he was still an excellent actor.
Yes.
And then, you know, towards the end, when more stuff gets revealed, that was a twist I wasn't expecting at all. But it also added a huge sense of, you know, humanity. It kind of brought it down to a discernible level, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was a great movie because they could have gone in a lot of different directions and made it less human than it ended up being. And I thought it was excellent that the human factor was so important in telling the story and telling how it unfolded.
Definitely. I mean, you can tell when they were planning the movie, they put a ton of thought into it. You know, they did a lot of reading between the lines, and everything down to the colors. You know, the colors they used really gave you a sense of just mediocrity. You know, there was no flavor, there was no spice, there was nothing there. You know, colors of the uniforms, you know, they're stereotypical black, you know, shiny, big helmets. I mean, you could tell they had a little budget. I think all the guards were wearing motorcycle helmets. Mm-hmm. You know, but the more the movie sucks you in, you know, the less you notice the, you know, the cheesiness of a lot of factors of a mm-hmm. low-budget movie.
And you know what? One of the things that I have to complain about not this movie, but actually the director did another movie that just came out not too long ago, which is Ultraviolet. And they actually used a lot of the fighting sequences and, you know, just the whole gun kata, which is one of the coolest things in that movie. That they used it, you know, with a huge budget in Ultraviolet, and it doesn't look as good as it did in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, and this is the first movie I've ever seen that the gun kata in, so I have no clue if this was like an original concept or not.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's the first time
he
came up with it for this movie.
Awesome. I mean, it made the movie. You know, it wasn't... and that's kind of getting back to how much thought they put into it. I mean, most action movies, you know, people want gun, you know, explosions, blood. That's why people watch action movies. The thing I liked about this one is there was enough action to keep you... To remind you, it was an action movie. It was a futuristic setting, but it didn't dominate it. Like, I mean, most people who have seen this movie compared to The Matrix, I did notice a lot of similarities. Some of the fight sequences just screamed in The Matrix, which kind of annoyed me. But then again, the fighting style made up for it. You know, but the action didn't totally dominate, and the movie still had substance. It still had, you know, again, even though the plot was, it's we've seen it, you know, we've been familiar with it. It's something that we've all seen in movies or read in books in high school or things along those lines, but it was a nicely, the whole package was put together very nicely, I thought.
No, I definitely agree, and I think that, you know, in comparing it with The Matrix, one of the big differences between these two movies is, well, besides that one was a big success and everybody saw and nobody actually got to see this movie, was that, you know, this movie concentrated on guns a lot more and made the guns look pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
The Matrix doesn't concentrate on the guns that much, you know. There is a lot of guns in The Matrix, but they're, you know, martial arts themselves are a lot more central to it.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think it was the final gun battle of the movie. It was, I mean, the fighting style with the guns, it was just, you know, it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon with pistols. You know, it was just,
yeah.
it was freaking amazing. You know, I gotta say, I cannot stand Christian Bale. I've never seen a movie I've liked him in.
Not even Batman Returns?
You know, he ruined that whole entire movie for me. I lost interest because he's not a good actor. He has, you know, he's kind of like, I can't remember who, but he's like the kid from, good God, can't remember,
You can't remember the kid or the movie?
No, I can picture him. The kid that sees dead people. What was that movie?
Olsen something. That's The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, that The Sixth Sense, the kid from that movie. I mean, I can't stand him because in every movie I've seen him in, he cracks for half the movie. He's, you know, he's typecast. He has one act. You know, he has one acting style. Christian Bale's the same way for me. You know, he just...
Yeah, he can be very
doesn't have any,
plastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, this is how he is, and which is good if you can find a role for him like this one. This is the only movie I've enjoyed watching him in. You know, I can't think of anyone else that they could have picked to do better for that role.
I can't believe he ruined Batman Returns for you.
Sorry, man. It just, yeah, I mean, he has one tone of voice, one expression. You know, he's not a good actor in my opinion.
I don't understand why they don't do more in acting, you know, to use a different tone of voice for different situations. I think that adds that's what makes great actors like Al Pacino and, you know, Robert De Niro. Those guys can convey so much just with the tone of voice. I mean, The Devil's Advocate wasn't a great movie, but just watching, you know, him just go off
in
his rants and tirades, just so much fun to watch.
Oh, totally.
Like, I want to be that cool when I grow up.
Yeah. Can I be him when I grow up? Yeah. I mean, you know, see, I mean, everything down to, I mean, Christian Bale, to be quite honest, when I saw him, I wasn't able to put the name to the face. You
Oh,
know, the
okay.
first time I saw him in the movie and Equilibrium, it was just like, oh God, here we go. You know, it's like he's gonna ruin another movie for me. You know, but he didn't. You know, he and I think it really comes down to, I don't know if they took this into consideration with the casting or anything, but with, you know, the plot of the movie, the feeling they were trying to convey, you know, his facial, the structure of his face, you know, the cheekbones, the eye line, you know, all of that, it really made him fit his role.
Oh yeah, he could keep a straight face throughout the whole movie,
Yeah,
which was weird.
and you know, he could go through a whole movie without changing his tone of voice. You know, why am I wrong?
No, you're not. But I just feel like we're beating up on Christian Bale for being like, well, you're a good puppet, dude.
Well, hey, you said that. I didn't. I just said I didn't care for the guy. You know, but he was Batman, so he, you know, he's not doing too bad.
Oh no, he, you know, he made okay after this. I mean,
Yeah.
there's some decent actors in this movie, and like you said, I think that one of the definite good actors was that kid. I mean, he did so much to, you know, carry a lot of the scenes where they were both playing.
Yeah. Oh, I mean he yeah, I mean the kid made me hate him in the movie. You know, I just it's like, God, why, when's this kid gonna disappear? But I mean there was a lot of, I don't want to say no name people, but there was a lot for as many faces I recognized. You know, there two of the guys were from are in Prison Break right now. You know, can't remember his real name, but in the movie he played one of the members, one of the guys who led the resistance. And then real quick, I don't remember him being in the movie for very long, but well, the guy that plays the older brother in Prison Break, I think his name's like Dominic Purcell or something. He, you know, he was in it, so I recognized them. I recognized, you know, one of the guys who, you in the movie, you quickly find out that things are gonna progress rather pretty rapidly. You know, he was Boromir from, you know, Lord of the Rings movies. And even, you know, one of the main figures in the movie, you know, he was, can't remember his name, but he played Robert the Bruce in Braveheart. You know, so it's like through the whole movie, you know, then you have Tate Diggs, but through the whole movie, it's kind of like you're seeing all these familiar faces, but I think all of them did a role that was.
They really fit their, yeah, there was a great
Yeah, you know,
casting.
if it, I mean, again, if it their body language, their facial features, their, you know, it fit that person to a T. And I think that's kind of what helped carry the movie.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, there was definitely not enough money in that movie for, you know, to make it really a sci-fi dominated movie where the special effects really do play a good role. I mean, you could see that the cars that they were using and everything else, you know, it was just like just within the budget.
Yeah, but I think that might have ruined the movie, actually. I mean, how many, I don't know about you, but I've seen a ton of movies that were ruined because they had so big a budget and they didn't, it's almost like they didn't know what to spend it on. So either they got, you know, either they got some real big name actor or actress who wasn't right for the role, or they spent it
What,
all on
like the Fifth Element?
Yeah, you know, or they spent it all on special effects that the movie didn't need because all the other elements would have made it a
Oh
good movie.
yeah. Yeah, we can both puke at Star Wars right now.
Yeah, let's. Why'd you have to go there? Yeah, I mean, seriously, just going so nice.
Well, you know, I don't think I can respect myself if I don't say that Jar Jar Binks is the most hideous creature in movie making ever. It ripped my heart out the first time I saw that.
Did you go home and cry?
I pretty much cried in the theater. I'm like, wow. So Michael Jackson starts being black again and they put him in a movie?
Yeah, there was yeah. We just
It's
that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, but anyways, I think that we've done a pretty good job at spoiling this movie, and if not spoiling it, at least trying to make you interested on watching it is a great movie. It makes you think, and I think that's those two things should sell a movie.
Yeah, totally. You know, most people have Netflix now, so you know. It's definitely worth adding it to the top of your queue.
So, this is Lokhtar, and I'm here with Dan.
That's me.
And we're signing off.
Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye. Bye.